Before we get into the podcast, I want to share with you about our new ebook, Creating and Curating a Recruiting Culture. Now, this ebook will help you recruit volunteers more effectively at your church and will walk you through how to build a recruiting culture and make recruitment and leadership development part of everyone's role, not just the pastor's. That is going to be vital for you to grow your church. To download that for free, just visit myleadershippipeline.com/5LQ. Once again, that's myleadershippipeline.com/5LQ. Now, enjoy the podcast.
You're listening to the Five Leadership Questions podcast, Recruiting Week. My name is Daniel Lim, and I'm here with Eric Geiger.
Yes, yes.
And Todd Adkins.
Well, you know, I'm really excited to be here, and I'm excited to be here today because we're talking about one of my favorite subjects, which is culture.
That was horrible.
That was one of the weakest introductions. First off, when you said you're excited, you sounded like you.
There you go.
Yeah.
Hashtag air horn fail.
Air horn fail. We do this. We learn in front of you. So we're not going to cut that out. We didn't cut out Daniel's mistake in the last episode.
Or did we?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. It's up to Chandler. But yeah. Today we're going to be
talking about five mistakes. See if you can find them.
It's like, where's Waldo? But today we're going to be talking about how to create a culture of recruiting. And we have the man here on the podcast who wrote a book about this. So first question, how important is culture to recruiting volunteers? And when I saw that, the first thing that popped into my head was conviction culture constructs, which, Eric, did you know seminary professors are actually quoting that and not giving you credit now?
Are they really?
It's becoming that prolific.
When you move to that stage, it's great.
Yeah, it is great.
It's been said.
Yeah. Once, if you have an idea that no longer gets attributed, that means it's spreading.
You made it.
Yeah. Yes,
you made
boom!
But maybe, Eric, you can kind of...
Our content, Kevin, is getting jacked and not attributed to us. we've arrived. So culture is important for any discipline or value that you want to see proliferated across the church. So an inviting culture, a church that invites people to come to church, it can't just be a couple of people. If it's really going to thread through the whole church, it's got to be in the culture. You need an inviting culture. If hospitality is really going to be a hallmark of the church, you have to have a hospitality culture. In the same way with leadership development or with high levels of people volunteering and jumping into the ministry, there needs to be a culture of recruiting volunteers where it's not just the senior pastor on the stage twice a year preaching his guts out trying to recruit volunteers, but there's a culture where people in the church are also inviting people to serve. So Peter Drucker said culture eats strategy for breakfast. Mm-hmm. Culture is super important. So a culture of recruiting volunteers, Todd's mentioned this in some of the other episodes, it's everyone who's serving senses, hey, I can invite other people to serve with me. Mm-hmm. So if I'm volunteering in the kids ministry or the student ministry or the first impressions ministry or the a group leader, I'm constantly thinking this ministry is for all of us. It's normal for people here at our church to serve. And so I'm inviting people to serve. So it's very important. If you build a culture of that, then it's sustainable. You're not having to schedule on your calendar X number of times to make the big ask. It's happening all the time. There's people who are constantly recruiting.
It's normal. You're not normal if you're not doing
right.
It.
Yeah, but in Design to Lead, I mean, you talk about conviction and constructs as well, and because just having a recruiting culture isn't enough. Right, Eric?
Well, there's always debate on, and this could be a good podcast for us sometime to discuss, the relationship between systems and culture.
Systems create culture.
So some say that. So Todd just said, hey, systems create culture. Some believe that. Others believe, no. You have to start with culture. And if you build a value such as recruiting so deeply in the culture, or if you build the biblical conviction of the priesthood of every believer, that everyone is gifted and asked by the Lord to serve, gifted to serve and invited by the Lord to serve, if you build that conviction into the culture of the church, then it's... even if you don't have a system, the culture is going to overwhelm your lack of systems and people are just going to be serving.
But everyone's going to create their own system then.
So you got to let me debate myself for a second here, Daniel. The system view people would say, yeah, but if we don't have a system, then people will go in a million different directions. So we have to have a system. But here's what both would agree. No matter if you start with system or you start with culture, both would agree that they really do interplay with one another.
It's the warp and woof.
Or the chicken and the egg.
No, warp and
woof. Or the cow and the horse.
No. Warp and woof is a real thing, dudes.
That's not what we're talking about.
So,
no idea what you're talking about.
I have no idea what a warp and a woof is.
You've never heard the warp and woof of, you know, like, it's used. You've never heard warp and woof?
I was making a very deep philosophical argument on culture or systems, and all of a sudden you're talking about warps and woofs, dude.
Okay, let me break down.
Drop it for
warp
us.
And woof is. Warp and woof is actually the way that someone creates fabric. So if you went to a loom, there's a warp, which is the things that are the longitudinal threads, and then the woof is one thread that goes throughout the whole loom and the process.
Wow.
So that would be the culture. And I would say the longitudinal threads are the ones that's your structure, system story. Okay. That's all the elements of pipeline. So when we talk about pipeline as a philosophy and a framework, it's really, I want to create that culture of pipeline. And we're using those frameworks.
According to dictionary.com, the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence are the warp and woof of the American nation.
Boom!
Wow. Listen, Todd is the smartest man in the room. He is the smartest man in the room.
So back to culture
and systems for the rest of us who have never heard of warp and woof. Here's what you should understand.
Y'all should just read more.
Even if you decide that...
Eric reads a lot more than I do, by the way.
Even if you decide, hey, I'm not sure which one is first, the culture or the systems, it doesn't really matter. Because they play off one another. And so if you are a culture first person, you still need systems to reinforce the culture. If you're a systems first person, you aren't having systems for the sake of systems. You're having systems to build culture.
Mm, right.
So both are critical. So
you're saying it makes up the fabric of the church. Is that what you're saying?
I am saying that
you need conviction culture.
I'm saying you need conviction culture and constructs, and that the argument on which comes first isn't as important as realizing I'm gonna use both. I'm gonna use systems and culture.
No, that's a good discussion. So let's actually keep on going along the warp and woof of culture. I don't know how to use that phrase. What are some of the best levers leaders have at their disposal?
Here's what's awesome. Somebody's going to listen to this.
Embed culture.
And they're going to get up in front of their staff and try to use that. And they're going to get the same response from their staff as I got from you.
Okay, if we're talking about that, if you know how to create a meme,
go to
90SL, look up 90 Second Leadership on YouTube. And Todd has some great stills.
Warp and woof it.
Warp and woof him, yeah. We'll send you some swag if you warp and woof Todd.
I might have to do a 90 second SL on warp and woof now. Thanks a lot, guys.
Yes. Okay, question. What are some of the best levers leaders have at their disposal to create and embed culture?
Stories and heroes. So if you want to create culture, you tell stories that embody the values that you want to see in the culture.
Yeah.
So if, for example, you want everyone in the church to think, hey, I can recruit, you tell stories about other people who've recruited people to join them in their ministries. You tell stories. So that's stories. Heroes. Hero is, and we know that Jesus is the ultimate hero of the church, but you really do create culture by who and what is celebrated. Plato said that whatever is celebrated is cultivated. So if you want to build a culture where everyone's recruiting, where if you're a small group leader, you're thinking about who's going to launch the next small group. If you're a kids ministry leader, you're thinking about who you can invite to serve with you. You hold up as heroes those who do that. You throw up a slide. Hey, here's the volunteer of the week. Here's the leader of the week. This is Daniel. Daniel's a small group leader. He has been for the last 18 months, but they just launched a new small group. He raised up the leader and launched the new group. You celebrate that. You hold Daniel up as a hero. Here's Amy. Amy and Todd, they serve in fourth grade Sunday school. Our church has started a second service, and Amy and Todd recruited the leader for the fourth grade Sunday school class in the second service, and those leaders served with Amy and Todd for the last 3 months, and now they're starting the new Sunday school class and then at the new service hour. The stories you tell, the heroes you celebrate, that is prime tools in your toolbox as a leader for culture creation.
So I have a question about that. I agree with you on the heroes and the stories. And in both instances, you talked about other people, lifting other people up. But there's always that debate, especially among like small group pastors, being like, oh, is our senior pastor in a small group? Shouldn't they talk about their experience of being in a small group? And there's definitely that modeling that needs to happen. So for this, as the preacher or the communicator or whoever is celebrating and encouraging and sharing their stories and their heroes, at what point should they actually talk about themselves? And should they talk about themselves?
Well, it depends.
Because that would make them the hero.
Well, it depends what the value is. Yeah. So we're talking about here, the value being getting other people to recruit, not just the leader. Mm-hmm. So this is a case where I wouldn't suggest that the senior leader talk about recruiting.
Okay. Because then people would, oh.
Right. Yeah. Now, if we're talking about the value of inviting people to church.
Or being in biblical community.
Or being in a small group, for sure the leader should say, and it's not, it happens more threaded. You know, hey, last Tuesday in my group, or, you know, Sunday morning right after I preach, I go and join our small group or I join our Sunday school class. Hey, last week I got a great opportunity to invite someone in our neighborhood to church. That is the leader showing that, hey, I live out everything that I'm asking you to live out, and these things are important here. But in this case, because we're trying to have the fourth grade Sunday school teacher recruit, we're trying to get the small group leader recruit, we're trying to get the current greeter to recruit, I don't think the senior leader should stand in front of everyone and say, last week I recruited a new volunteer. That would actually, that's the story you don't want to tell.
That's a good distinction.
Don't tell that story, because then you're further proliferating the idea that the senior leader does the recruiting.
That's good.
The other thing that I would also say is keep in mind that you can piggyback off of things that you're also, like, you may have a core value of your church that you're using a video to celebrate, and that you always have the opportunity to, you know, come back in. And what Eric was talking about is making it a natural part of the church. I mean, if you remember a previous episode, we said, hey, you're not normal if you don't serve here. Well, we not only do we want to make it you're not normal if you serve here, you're not normal unless you're reproducing yourself in whatever role that you're or capacity you're in. Edgar Schein would say, you know, the levers you have are what you celebrate, measure, and control, and then also what you reprimand. The other lever that you have is when culture forming is who you hire or promote. Those are all, I want to make sure we're moving fast and that you get an opportunity to talk to Daniel, because you asked a question. So those are some quick hit levers that I would say, if you did research on it, those would be ones that would be bullet points.
See, Eric, I mean, Todd quoted Edgar Schein and he mentioned reprimand. So you're supposed to reprimand your volunteers, no?
Yeah.
Going back to episode two.
So you know what, Daniel, that's just of the three tools that Sean mentions, you were essentially saying that I'm going to use the reprimand tool the most.
It's like five, but it is the organizational.
That's the one tool I'm using.
I am the Lord's instrument. No, but I mean, that's a business book from like,
business.
Dude, that guy is like
40 years old. He's been ripped off so many times.
Consultant, yeah.
Edgar, he's like 86 and still going.
Yeah. Dude, that guy's, if you've not heard of Edgar Schein, what? A failure of nerve.
You don't think?
No,
I think
he's
dead?
No, I just was impressed at how you got so passionate about Edward Schein being still.
I like Edgar Schein.
I mean, you started the show, I'm so excited. Edward Schein's 86 is still going. I mean, the you could tell what really gets you going.
Geeked out. I want to be 86 and still with gas in the tank and contributing. I don't eat like I want to be 86.
You know, you're drinking Monster energy drink right now. So.
I'm a newborn.
This is good. All right. Third question. How do I assess my current culture?
Heroes and stories.
There you go.
Next.
Question four.
I say facetiously, but it is a way when you first go in, what stories are being told, what heroes have been. So you change the culture by telling new stories and pointing to new heroes, but you can assess a culture by what's talked about, what's prayed for, what stories are told from the past, what heroes are lifted up as this is the kind of person that we celebrate as a church.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I think a lot of our podcast listeners will, I'm hoping that during this entire week, you are taking away tools and constructs and ideas that you can implement this week in your church and in your recruiting. But I find that most leaders get so excited about a new idea that they haven't tried, that when looking at this question, how do I assess my current culture? They don't spend enough time assessing their current culture because they're so obsessed with creating the new culture. And if you don't assess your current culture, you might actually end up going in a loop back, thinking you're going to do something new when actually you're getting back to your original starting point.
Well, and you don't know, you don't know what lies beneath.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is, you know, in your book, Designed to Lead, Eric's got a framework of, hey, this is what culture is. You've got artifacts. Artifacts are those visible things that, you know, we talk about. They're articulated values. And then you have what lies beneath. And what lies beneath is the actual, that's what people actually do. So I would say you want to pay attention to, yes, what you're saying, but what are people actually doing? What's the behavior there? Then also, guys, take a look at your policies.
Yeah.
Take a look at your processes, because those systems pieces speak very loudly to what your culture actually is. Because a lot of churches have policies and processes in place because of something bad that happened at some point in time. And but those are really embedding a culture, whether you realize it or not.
So to continue on, I absolutely love this quote by Sun Tzu and, you know, The Art of War. And this is a little bit of a paraphrase, but he basically says something to the effect of, if you know your enemy, you're going to win half the battles. But if you know yourself, you're going to win the other half. And in light of that, what I basically bring that up because we can become so obsessed with knowing our enemies. Was that the drop mic for Sun Tzu?
That's drop mic, Sun Tzu.
Because part of it is we can be so obsessed with knowing they're not really our enemies, but other churches' cultures, and we could be so obsessed with learning what other churches are doing that we don't spend enough time assessing our own. And that is going to be so important. So at the end of our podcast today, we're actually going to give you a good framework for understanding the different values. So be sure to stick in all the way through there. But before we get there, why don't we go to question four, which is poetry and plumbing. Is culture created by poetry or plumbing?
Oh, goodness. I can't contain myself. All right, I'm going to need a little
bit
of time.
Excited.
I'm going to need a little time on this.
And I just can't hide it.
One of the things that I always say, and anytime I'm talking about leadership development, and you've heard me say it probably at least a dozen times on the podcast, so you know I'm kind of excited about this one. Leadership development is poetry and plumbing. It is vision that inspires, yes, but it's the systems and processes that deliver on the dream. So what else do you want me to say, Daniel?
Well, you had a conversation with the guy who kind of coined the term poetry and plumbing in the business world, and you're the one who brought it into the church world.
He's talking about marketing.
Yeah.
And is Dr. March. And
Professor
he's also
emeritus, yes, at Stanford.
He's also 80 something years old and still has gas in the tank.
Yeah.
And
so tell us about the conversation you had.
Well,
the phone call you had with him.
I think the only reason why he talked to me, because he was really intrigued that I was a pastor and I was asking him a question, because I had sent him a quadrant. You know this.
Yes. I love your poetry and plumbing quadrant.
I you know, one axis is poetry, one axis is plumbing. And just to say, hey, are you a drifter, a dreamer, a doer, or a developer? And that's like the quadrant and what it looks like. And so he was, I think, just really intrigued. I was like, hey, I see this from a leadership perspective. I think he originally was talking about from marketing. He also talks about leadership a lot. And so we talked about all kinds of stuff, because, you know, I was calling him and it was, I mean, we talked about women in leadership. We talked about all kinds of different things. So he would say, for instance, in women in leadership, he said men are born to have confidence. And so a lot of times their confidence exceeds their competence. Mm. And the reason why we don't see more women leading is because they may have more competence than they have confidence.
Oh, yeah. I recently came across a research study on this comparing men and women and if they would apply to a job that they don't feel like they're qualified for. And, and 80%+ of men, it was something majority of men basically said, hey, even if I don't even meet half of the qualifications for this, I think I can do it. I'm going to apply.
Yeah,
whereas for women, they felt like they had to meet 100% of the qualifications before they could apply for a job. So they were less likely to apply for jobs than men. So that's fascinating that you had that conversation with Dr. March on that.
And it will be really interesting to look at generations moving forward. So if you look at iGen and the recent episode we did Dr.
Go
Twing,
back and listen to that.
Who had research on those guys. I'm very interested to see what that looks like in the future because that generation seems to lack confidence.
Yeah. Episode 233. Yes. Another thing on that before, Todd, you kind of...
I'll get back into poetry.
Yeah, I'd love for you to tease out each of the areas on that because I love that framework. But I was recently talking to my wife. We're kind of discerning. Both of us were public school and we're trying to figure out, should we continue our kids in public school or should we do a couple years of homeschooling? So Christina's kind of doing a lot of research and conversation and testing around that. But what she came across is the fact that for girls, third grade is that's actually where their self-esteem is the highest at third grade. It was from research from a book about raising brave
that's
girls.
Really good.
Third grade, and then after that, it dips until they become an adult and regain the self-esteem and self-confidence back. So, I mean, this should be another episode.
Oh, it definitely is because we're deviating greatly from recruiting.
We are. So let's get back to the quadrant.
Okay, so I'll break it down really quickly. Because I feel like I'm definitely hogging this time. But if you look at the poetry and plumbing, so if you are all poetry and no plumbing, that would be the upper right-hand quadrant. That would be you are a dreamer because you're just talking about development. You're just talking about you're just talking about recruiting. You're just talking about being a church that has every member in ministry. I mean, how many churches have that? Well, that's a good thing to say, and it might be your church. And if you don't have that, that might be something you want to say. But be sure that you have the systems and processes to back it up. Now, the other go diagonally down, that would be doers. So I am not talking about it. I'm not casting vision for it. I don't have a bunch of poetry. All I have is plumbing. And so we've created a culture that is all about doing, doing, doing. And it's about the task. It's not about the person. It's about just filling that gap. And this is jobs to be done. We just have to get this done versus developing the person for the position. Mm. Then you have, you don't want to be here. This is where you're drifting, where you aren't casting vision for development and development of people, and you don't have systems and processes in place that are clear. Then you're just drifting. And a lot of churches, unfortunately, are drifting. They're just business as usual. When something comes up, they fill it, but they're not aggressively going after really anything other than keeping Sunday going. Then you have the developer. You have a poetry and plumbing. You have compelling vision as well as clear systems and processes in place to actually make sure that people get developed. So I have a map mentality. I don't have a menu. I know where I'm taking people. I know clearly what my pipeline looks like. I've defined those roles and I've made sure people know what they are.
So let's go to our last question, which is what are some practical steps to actually start changing your culture?
Well, Todd, since you dropped some serious wisdom on question four, let me talk a little bit on this one because this is one I'm really passionate about. People ask me this one frequently. Will Mancini gave me some good handles on this to understand the difference between actual values and aspirational values. So culture is really the shared values in your church. What we believe and what we value and how those values get expressed in our church. And we together hold to these things. We believe these things. We value these things. So a helpful tool would be to, and you may already have some values written down, but to look at actual values and aspirational values. So if you would say, hey, what are the six things that we really want in our church to be in the culture? Of a list of six things, four of those have to be actual things that are already in the culture. Because if you put down a list of six things and they're all aspirational, you aren't really shepherding and leading the culture where you are. You have some make-believe church somewhere.
Yeah, it's someone else's culture.
It's someone else's culture. Yeah. It's not your culture. That's a good way to say it. So now I'm not saying that you put on that list actual values that are in the culture that you don't want in the culture that you would love to get rid of. Just don't put those in the list. But there are some affirmable values already there. You go back to how the church started. You go back to the things that the church was passionate about that are awesome. The things that the church is passionate about that are awesome. What are the actual values? And so maybe if you have six, choose four that are actual, and you're going to keep celebrating these. You're going to keep lifting these up. And then what are maybe two aspirational values? I want these in the culture. Our leadership team wants these in the culture. They're not in our culture. And you understand that, hey, the actual ones are, we're going to keep celebrating them. We're going to keep telling stories about them. We're going to keep measuring them. We're going to keep clarifying these and preaching these and holding to these. But here's two values we would love to infuse in the culture. And the reason you need more actual than aspirational is, to Daniel's point, if you have more aspirational than actual, it's really someone else's culture. It's some other church. It's not the one that you're in now. So identify the actual values you want to retain, celebrate those, have less aspirational values, but have a plan for those aspirational values to really embed them in the culture. So let's, in terms of recruiting and volunteerism, or every member being a minister, or everyone serving, you know, assuming that's one of the values, you have to ask, is that currently actual or is that aspirational? And if it's not currently actual, that's a great value to have as an aspirational value. You'll want to put some sticky language to it, you know, whether it's everyone serves, or every member a minister, or
yeah, I mean, you want to paint it, right?
Yeah, whatever language would fit your, you know, everyone's connected to a ministry, or everyone uses his gift or her gift, whatever language you use, but that would become something that paints a picture for the people that here's a value, and we're gonna work really hard to get this into the culture of the church.
That's so good. See, I told you I could be quiet.
Well, you dropped some serious knowledge on poetry and plumbing, so I felt like I had to try to match your intensity there.
It was difficult for me to be quiet, though.
That's good. So I love how Eric talked about the actual and aspirational. In No Silver Bullets, I talk about two more. Thanks, Todd. I talk about two more where it's really looking at Patrick Lencioni's framework on values, where it's core values, which would be what Eric's saying, actual. And then you'd have aspirational values, the same thing. But you'd also have accidental values, which are values in your church that you have that you don't want to have, but it's there and you want to get rid of. So you need to know what those are so you're not celebrating them, but it's good to articulate them so that you know what they are. And then also permission to play values. And I feel like the permission to play values, anytime we talk about culture or values, that is immediately where most churches go to. And they go there because this is their gospel-centered, spirit-filled, Bible-believing. And they are values. They really are.
Right.
But they're not core values because they really are permission to play ones. There are things that need to be in your statement of faith, But if you have a list of six values, you don't want three or four of them to be the permission to play ones, because that, once again, is not going to differentiate you from other churches down the road. So when it comes to practical steps to start changing your culture, you got to know your values. You got to know your culture so that you can actually move ahead and bring about a new one.
That's great stuff. I'd completely forgotten about accidental. Mm-hmm. Accidental values, because there's so many in our church. The only way that you really can move forward is if you just take a little bit of time and step back and really exegete the culture and make sure that it's not just your perspective, but you're getting the perspective of others as well.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for listening in. We have one more day on recruiting week. So if you haven't yet subscribed, be sure to do that. And we will be back tomorrow giving you some tools on onboarding.